So as many of you might have heard,
Einstein and he wrote his GR equation, first introduced lambda in his equations, general relativity equations, because he didn't know that universe was expanding, and to explain no expansion, he added this constant to the equation to keep things static. Interestingly enough, so at that point the idea was that universe is filled with matter and it's no expansion, and somehow you add this constant to keep things going. And at the same time, using just this constant, cosmological constant with no matter,
realized there is another solution to Einstein equation, which is the
so-called De Sitter universe, and you can get expansion without any matter. So that's how this whole subject started. Then in 1922, Friedman
realized Einstein equations without any lambda give us these FRW universes expanding solutions. And later, a few years later, Hubble, in fact, made the observation and realize universe is expanding. So the whole motivation behind adding the constant in the first place went away, and then Einstein, say they call this biggest blunder, or like this discarded lambda, and it was as if there is no need to cosmological constant, until people from a different perspective, quantum mechanics and then quantum field theory, specifically for example Zeldovich, and apparently Pauli earlier when they were doing the quantum mechanical calculation, realized that if you account for the energy in the vacuum of a quantized field, then you get correction to your energy momentum tensor. Which happened to be on the right hand side of the Einstein equation. So in general, any contribution to vacuum that you expect from quantum mechanical quantum and quantum field theory does give you non-zero constant.
So then again, the whole game has started that, so now how do we bring back lambda? And of course, there was another motivation that started to tell us we really like to have some sort of vacuum energy, which was that by that time, around like early 1970s and 1980s, there were people starting to think that inflation would be a nice solution for some of the other problems we have in cosmology, and that relied on the concept of some term in your Einstein equation that acted like vacuum. And the idea was that you can motivate this if you have your using quantum field theory, and you can get the vacuum part of those fields to give you this contribution, and then drive the inflation. But then, soon after, there was also the realization that if you naively account for the value of the vacuum energy that shows up, basically, this is going to be a very large number because, for example, one way to do is that you go to one loop quantum vacuum fluctuation, and in general, for example, you are taking some, let's say, some integral. The vacuum contribution to the field. And then you have all the wave modes, and this is a naively infinite divergent. So this gives me a divergent value for the vacuum that I'm calculating for different particles and the standard model particles that I have. And so that wouldn't be realistic, because if I put an infinite number on the right-hand side of Einstein equation, then if it's, for example, positive, it makes the universe to collapse, to expand very fast, accelerate very fast. Or if it was negative, it would have collapsed very fast. So there was already indications that we have a problem here. So obviously, you don't expect to real physics to be divergent. So you're saying, OK, I can rely on these theories up to some maybe cutoff. And then I expect these contributions to be of order of some, depending what mass it's corresponds to, this cutoff. And now you can say, OK, what is the expectation? Of course, you don't know what exactly this is, because to get it exactly, you have to do the loop calculation to all orders. And you can always say, OK, what if the number I'm getting here is very large, but I have this other contribution that cancels out this? But then it would be very strange that when you're doing this for all these different particles, they cancel exactly the same way, and you end up with zero. So I'm going to get back to this CC problem. But this was a theoretical aspect. And then, but up to that point, even like 90s and even like late 90s, people just regarded this as a theoretical problem. We don't know how to make this go away, what we are calculating from the theory, and make it zero. There must be something we are doing wrong. And probably the lambda term that appears in the Einstein equation is zero, given that it cannot be this large, and we don't have any reason for it to choose some random number in the middle. Until late 90s, then we had the supernova pointing out that universe is apparently accelerating. And then later on, we had other different observations that were confirming that result, like WMAP, CMB observations, 2003 came up. And then later, thinking around 2004 maybe, is the BAO observation and so on, that they all seem to say a double dot is positive, which means that I need to have some vacuum energy starting to dominate in the universe. And I will actually, so that's my plan to maybe today spend some time to explain this observations and then. So, and then now we are back with, and then they, you predict some rho lambda out of this observation. And as I will show to you, this is going to be much smaller than the one that you had from here. So now the problem is not only that it's not zero, it is some number, many orders of magnitude smaller than this. How do we motivate that number? Okay, so given this, here is what I want to do. Maybe today we spend some time going over what it means to have expanding universe. What, how do I know what is, I have some vacuum energy, these things. And these are very simple physics, back, and I'm not going to go to the technical thing that I don't even know how to do. Just I want to do back of the envelope calculation. So I want you guys to help me out to do that, okay? And then next time, maybe towards the end, we get to go back a little bit to this problem. And then next time, we can go over billions of models, I mean, many models that explain how what could be the source of rho lambda. And these are like quintessence model. Maybe we do one of that, DGP model, KSNs model. These, some of them just try to give us some dynamics for how rho lambda should be, if it's not exactly cosmological constant, but some vacuum energy which is dynamical and changing in time, how would that dynamic behave? And then there are some other models that try to specifically solve the CC problems. And like cascading. And landscape. And some general ideas that people have, like back reaction. And this is long, so we see how much we can fit in next time. And maybe do a few of them ourselves. Yeah, that's, yeah, so the problem is that how do we inspire that constant like to be that value? How, why would it be, it's, do we, yeah, so small? Is there any reason for that to be? Yeah. And in fact, there are models that try to do this. But I mean, basically the idea, the reason is that, okay, you keep it as, let's say it was a constant. And it started very small. Then what happened to all these contributions? How did like, because at any like electro weak transitions and so on, then I am getting more vacuum energy, either positive or negative place, you start to have this contribution. Okay, so the problem is that the idea that was a, for example, for the file, the main maybe hope that people have, but the reality is that the supersymmetry is broken at some point, and then when you break it, then you again, you don't have, so maybe at those terms, during the supersymmetry, the fermion and boson contribution cancel out each other, but when it's broken, then how, why should they cancel out each other anymore? And it doesn't seem to. Okay. So the observations. You guys help me out and tell me, first of all, what are the tools I need to, the cosmological tools that I need to relate expansion of the universe to something observable. For example, so what we mean by accelerated expansion, for example, is some and what is A? Do you remember? Or scale factor, okay. So how does A in FRW universes is related to the matter and everything in the universe? I have I have right. So I have two equations. One is the two Friedmann equation, let's say. Okay. There is the first one. This is on this side I have the A. Different rows, right? And this could be the curvature as well, right? And then the second one, samples below the two, is something. It's related to an easy relation. These are like my tools in cosmology. Everything I want to do at background level, expansion of the universe, I need to use this. And it's easy to remember because on this side, this is A dot, H is A dot over A, right? Mm-hmm. Which is tells me if I have a co-moving part, I have the universe. I can take out the expansion out of it and treat it as if everything is constant in it, sitting at some point. Mm-hmm. But in physical, what is happening is that this box, every leg of this box is expanding by A. And then Einstein equation tells me how A dot over A is related to the density in the universe. So if I didn't have density, this would have been zero, but if I have density, it's natural to either get expansion or contraction, right? And this one is easy to remember, to me at least, because it's usually, instead of that, what you can always remember is the continuity equation, which is for every fluid or matter component, you can write the Euler equation, I think it is, which is rho dot how the density must be, as the universe is expanding, the density is starting to go down, and it's related to its own density that causes the expansion and the pressure. So these are the main equations that one has to remember. Yeah, so there are two independent equations out of three. I can combine this and this, get this. Or... Okay, so now the idea is that how can we get acceleration, right? So let's see. I know, for example, for most, for matter and radiation, how this P and rho are related. And in a strong energy condition, rho plus 3P is positive. So basically, you can, for this, for radiation era, for example, you can write P equal to W rho, or for matter the same way. And if W is positive, then, and rho is positive, it's obvious that rho plus 3P is going to be positive. And during matter, you don't have any pressure for dust. That means P is zero, and rho is energy density is positive. So I always get this side of the equation to be positive. And that means A double dot over A is always negative. So let's write it in terms of this. And I think Adrian went over this. So if I want to make this to be negative to get positive acceleration, for a positive density, what do I need? Yeah, W has to be right. So I need some component in universe to do that. And that's why we go to vacuum energy, because for vacuum, that's basically what we mean. If I have cosmological constant, W is equal minus 1, because rho is minus P. And I could also have some other models that, for example, with a scalar field, that W is less than minus 3. So, but the idea is to get this side negative. Okay. So, let's say now I take this, for example, some W, let's say. Then I can use this equation that gives me rho dot is minus 3H times, for every W, this is for every component. So, how does density change for different W's in time, or in A actually? Rho is, now I have it on it. Right, so this is A dot over A, right? Mm-hmm. If I solve it, but if we'll assume W is constant, mm-hmm. What do I get?
U over rho is T.
So you get
A to the power minus 3.
Right. Exactly. So, and this is there is a constant here, right? I call it, let's say, if I take today of A being 1, A not being 1, so now I can go back, put it here, and what do I get? H squared. Different rows. I get rho I not A to minus 3, 1 plus W plus the curvature part of it, which actually goes, it's something like some constant times A minus 2. That's the called the curvature. So when you write the metric, your metric could be have a spatial curvature as well.
It's normally written like 1 over 2, the code.
I call it here.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. And so now I put in different W's here. I know my universe has matter. And then I have radiation, And now I have something. If let's say I have some component that its W is less than minus 3, that means when I calculate this, I have different terms as universe expanding, competing with each other, right? So I have, for example, forget about radiation, because radiation has, okay, or not. I have matter, which is going as A minus 3. I have radiation, which is going at A minus 4, because W for radiation is 1/3. Put 1/3 here, get 4/3. And I get curvature, which was already. So if I put W exactly minus 1, for example, then I have the constant part, right? Rho lambda. If I don't put that, I have something that is going as 1 plus W minus 3, but this is all very small. If I call it epsilon, then this term is decaying very slowly. If I call this thing epsilon, let's say, then something, and this number is small, so it shows that rho lambda is changing, decaying very small, slower than the rest of the time. So, and there we get, we can show how H is governed through different components, right? So, rho total or H. We want to show how much each one of these are contributing. Now, if I do, let's say, ln of log of rho. Okay. And this term, for example, is decaying very fast. Okay, it's like this for radiation, for matter. It also decay, but its slope is minus 3. You have curvature. And then you have this constant. So if universe is expanding today, we must have cross the point that the H behavior is dominated by this rho lambda. So we must have crossed here. And this happens to be at, in the cosmological terms, very late universe, the so-called late redshift. So, okay, do you remember what is redshift? So, A at any time divided by A today goes as 1 plus the other H, better that I do this. Right? This is how you define redshift. So basically, if you have a photon coming somewhere in that co-moving box coming to us, if it started having some frequency, when it reaches us, it has something like a Doppler effect, and it has been redshifted, the frequency has changed. So basically, if I measure a frequency of a photon today, and I know what must have been originally the value of that, I can say what was the scale factor ratio towards our scale factor today, and then measure this ratio, and that's what's called the, that's why this redshift is very useful, right? Okay. So does anybody know, now that I have that, how do I really measure the expansion, if whether expansion is accelerated or not? Or?
Distances.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Distance is related to the H2.
Uh-huh.
So we can.
Right. We can deduce from that. So why is that? Because we know, let's say, so let's write that equation in terms of redshifts. Now that I know what it is. Instead of in terms of A, by writing in terms of redshift, what do I get? I get every negative sign over there, if I took today as A1, becomes positive power. So I get redshift. And how about the other one? Can we write, so I want to make this useful and dimensionless, to relate it to observation, I divide everything by the value of the Hubble constant today, which I call H0, assuming that today H0 is what we can measure, then what people write this is becomes square equals to, I multiply it and divide everything and take 3 and plug into this, and then you define for each component this omega, which is so what I end up having is this omega I plus omega k now each omega is telling me what is the, because H0 today is total density today, right? And this is each component density. So omega I is giving them me the ratio of the energy in each component. So if, for example, omega matter, you say is 0.3, then you are going to say, okay, so what is, whether if radiation is more than that, then we say, okay, what is omega radiation compared to omega I or omega lambda? Omega lambda is 0.7, and that's a good measure to see which one is. And so I have each of these, and the good thing is that given this, the I can also write that in terms of H not being different, omega I plus omega k, I have this relation that is equal to 1. Because you can just divide everything at the present time by H not as well. Or put this z everywhere equal to 0 and get 1. Okay, so now I want to do let's see, do I want to do deceleration? No. Okay, now I want to use all this knowledge and see if the universe is expanding. And as you said, I need some distance measurement. So, for example, one method is that if I have something in the universe that I knew what is its absolute luminosity, how much energy per unit of time it emits, and then I make an observation here, what would be the apparent luminosity that I observe per unit time, per unit surface? Let's say universe is not expanding at all. What would it be? So I would have the same energy that was, for example, emitted at some interval in time. Now is distributed in this bigger isotropic sphere, and I get it here, but the surface has been expanded, and it's now proportional to r squared. So what I get is L divided by 4 pi r squared, right? Mm-hmm. Now I want to add expansion to that. So how does what I measure here now relate to absolute luminosity that was emitted here? Why is that?
Physical distances A by common distances.
Okay, so what you're saying is that I get now what I measure is still look at it in co-moving. I do a simple calculation. I say, okay, let's say I had n number of photons emitted in delta t. And the energy of photon is, each photon is about proportional to its frequency. And this is observed at this delta t. Now I observe it here. So obviously, when this, if I make this emission, it lasted here, delta t, then it looks to me as if it lasted, because the time in this frame, it's like a redshift. It's redshifted in this other frame, right? So delta t itself has been redshifted. So let's see, now I observe, the number of photons, first of all, in the delta t prime that I measure. Okay, so I need to say it's delta t prime times the size of the co-moving. I know what it is in the co-moving, but now I get A, as you said. So I get A squared R squared. This one would be the one without expansion, now with expansion. But now the energy is also, the number of photons in that shell is the same. But each photon energy has been also redshifted. So I get another redshift off of this, which means and I just said this time is now also longer than this time. So if I write that in terms of that one, this now is, I took the 1/z out. cos delta E. Field this time is also red shifted, so I get another factor of 1 plus V. So this becomes delta P S squared R squared. So now this one was the absolute luminosity originally. So it's become M divided by S squared R squared. Oh, and now we have it 4P, 4pi. So this would have been if universe wasn't expanding. This is when the universe is expanding.
Something is wrong, right? Because it doesn't change. You have a squared, 1 plus z squared, so there's no factors of a in the universe.
I'm sorry, this is a to the a, right? Because today the size of the s sphere to be
R
is for moving distance, so this is what we call the distance of the sphere today.
So now what you call this thing,
the luminosity distance.
So it would have been the usual distance, but now because the universe is expanding, you have this redshifting effect, and that's what. So now I can go and find good candidate to measure that I know their absolute luminosity and how they act, and then see if I can measure D for them, and from that get the cosmology. So how do I do that?
So obviously this co-moving distance is also from the co-moving distance of the object to me, and it depends on, for example, the redshift as well. So that I can relate it to the redshift. And let's see. So now let's call DF. Equal to R times 1 plus Z. This is the co-moving box, and I make the observation R. Okay. If I know what is the redshift, can I say what is the value of R? Where this photon came from? If I know how much the photon has been redshifted. Right, exactly. So we know for photon you have a null trajectory, and the metric was something like beta square. Yeah, it's gone. Right. So for photon this is zero. So dr, the distance it travels in a co-moving box, is dt over a. Which time I can represent it in terms of a, because a is a function of time, right? So I can call it a dA. And that becomes, that's a dot, so a dot, and I divided and multiplied by another a, so I get h a squared. And dA, now I know how it's related to redshift, right? Because this is the relation between between a scale factor at any time and the redshift that it gives to the photon that is coming from that point. So dA is, what is this? So A naught is 1 plus Z minus 1. I take a differentiation of this, that's minus dz divided by 1 plus Z squared. And this is again 1 plus, if I divide A naught is 1, this is minus 2, right? So I end up with and you remember we had a relation for H as a function of Z, right? So yeah, I'm setting it to 1 today, yeah. So what do we get out? We get luminosity distance is RC times 1 plus Z. So now I know what is that, which is going to be 1 plus redshift of the object. Did we get a minus sign here? Okay, now to get an intuition of, for example, what observation is, let's do a simple manipulation. Let's assume, for example, we are making the measurements at very close to present time. The redshift is almost, redshift is less than 1. Then I can do expansion for H, which is going to be h of z is almost what it is today plus Taylor expansion. And dh by dz is what? Let's see, dH by dz is dH by dt times dA by d, what do I want to do, dt by dA times dA by dz. That's H dot divided by A dot dA by dz, we had it somewhere here, but at present I need to set the z equal to 0, so it's become just minus dz, so I just get a minus 1 here, and we want this all at present, so A dot today is also A dot naught divided by A naught, so that's H naught. On the other hand, H dot is minus A double dot over A, because it's A dot over A, minus A dot over A squared, which is H squared, divided by H naught. And this is gonna be, okay, here we are going, we wanna have this. And I, what I'm gonna do is I take one H naught out here. So this is gonna be one plus what is this? Put it here. I get two H naughts, and this is H naught. So I get. Make sure I didn't make a mistake in the signs. Yes, I have. There is a minus here, so it's gonna be minus. Times a double over a h naught squared minus one. Right, and this is again the whole thing is a t equal to t naught. And now people introduce this variable deceleration today, which is basically minus times this is minus a double dot over a h square. And you can see why they call it deceleration. Why is that? Exactly. So if a double dot is negative, deceleration is positive. But if the universe is accelerating, then this Q naught is negative. So you have minus deceleration instead of the usual positive deceleration, right? So now I can write this here, and I end up with H naught times 1 minus goes in plus Q naught plus 1 times. Okay, now somebody quickly tells me what does the luminosity distance turn out to be from this. I have H now. Put it here. Take the integral, what do I get? So this is from some redshift to today. Yeah, to redshift zero. So we can take that and make it zero to redshift. What is the F? Z times H divided by H naught. Now integrate that out, I get the first term, if I goes back in the up, I get 1 minus redshift. So 1 gives me redshift. The minus, now I have to, by dz gives me the square. Is that true? Awesome. And then to second order, that's what?
Explanation, right? Because you took from the beginning that it was a Taylor expansion.
Right, exactly. And taking the Taylor expansion. So what do I get? Come on, help me out. I get 1 over h naught times redshift. To second order, I get z squared minus this thing. So 1 minus 1 half gives me 1 half. minus, well, let's take that out. No, did I do it right? Yes. Good. So why did I go through this whole thing? Right. So because now, if I'm measuring this apparent luminosity distance, and I know that object absolute luminosity distance, that means I have its dl as a function of redshift. So if I get that through observation, then I can look at this and plot it versus redshift and see whether it's ending up or is it linear. So in fact, the first term is just what Hubble was doing. He measured this term and said the universe must be expanding because redshift is proportional to the distance. But the second term is what's the valuable information about acceleration. So if Q is negative, that means universe is accelerating. These terms becomes 1 minus negative is plus. So I have what I expect to see is that when I measure my luminosity distance versus redshift, if, let's say if Q was exactly 1, or was this deceleration positive, this would have been the line. Now, if Q was 0, I would get a little bit. If Q is negative, then I get
over
H2.
Right.
But then H2 is 1
plus something.
Right.
So it's not
there. So now if H0 comes out, okay, that becomes 1 minus Q.
Oh, so I thought that you have something like log plus V, but you have Taylor
expanded. Yes, I have Taylor expanded. Yeah, simple Taylor expanded to linear order.
What's wrong with log?
Why do you want log? Where do you want log?
If you just do the integral, you will
log. But this is how do I get the log out of this? This is, remember, h of z has this complicated function of redshift, right?
No, sorry, isn't it? If H0 times 1 plus Q0 plus 1.
Oh, you're saying why don't I do the
yeah.
1/1? I think then again, since I'm taking redshift to be very small, then you expand the log and then you get out. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So now this is the idea, intuition, what we expect from accelerated universe. Now you go to the observation, and then this is what these guys did. People, there were two groups, and in 99 and 98, measuring high redshift supernovae, they plotted the magnitude, which is related to the luminosity, apparent luminosity versus redshift, or what you see, you might see if you go to a talk, which is a big deal, and it's a next generation, for example, observation of dark energy and so on, always show is that how to measure supernovae on higher and on higher redshifts. And then this is what you'll see. See lots of points nearby, which is basically just giving me the edge here, because it's almost linear at very smaller edges. And then there you go almost to the point that this term starts to become dominant. And let's say this is redshift. This is some log of. And then they measure some things. And they tell you, like, this is most consistent with Q being less than a zero. I mean, in reality, you can do much better, go really through the whole integral instead of expansion. But, and then say, okay, now if I want, what would be the best fit for different values of, instead of what I did, put in matter and put in like some curvature and put some omega lambda, assume lambda, for example, is constant, you have a cosmological constant, and look at which one fits this best. Obviously, for example, if you get Q not being less than zero, you know that you need some vacuum energy. There is no way to get it, as I said before, with something that doesn't have W larger than zero. So that's, you know, for sure. So you start putting different values for omega lambda to see which one fits better. And sometimes they show the difference between that and the empty universe, or actually, what is it? So they say, for example, this would be a line for omega. The difference between different models and omega lambda being zero. And the difference, you can plot this data points. So it's this. And because at some point, even if you have omega lambda, if you go far enough back, omega matters in would become more dominant, right? Here, if you are here, omega lambda is dominant, but if you are here, omega matter is dominant. Then again, you go back to the, you start looking at H of Z is acting as with omega matter, so you have some relation like this. And you try to fit the data. Of course, it's not as clean as I'm showing it, but statistically, they said this is the 90% confidence, which this would have been omega matter of around 0.3 and omega lambda being about 0.7. But to do this, I just use the simplest case that I do this Taylor expansion. To do the better job, I need to use that equation. But as you see, if I want to take that integral, it very much depends on the equation of a state that I choose for W, right, to do as well. So I can play with W as well. And instead of just taking W for lambda to be -1, see how that changes. And so the idea is that the next generation observation would be differentiated between different values that are not. So far, for example, W -1 seems to be consistent for omega lambda, for lambda component. But what would be the correction to W? Okay. Maybe I briefly mention a couple of more experiments, the CMB, and then. Okay, so the CMB is a little bit more tricky than the luminosity distance. But the idea is that we know that matter and radiation were tightly coupled to each other somewhere here, right? This is radiation and matter. Radiation was dominant over matter. And this, in this area, you can practically treat the universe as a plasma that you have dark matter and baryons and then photons scattering off these electrons and protons. And it's a tight fluid. And then for that coupled fluid, you can write down some hydrodynamical description. But and define some sound speed that tells you how different perturbations in that fluid would propagate with that sound speed. And this is usually if I had isotropic photons, then this is related to the ratio of baryons versus is related to how many baryons I have versus how many photons I have, the density in photons. Now, so some of you who were present in Adrian talk, you know that the inhomogeneities and fluctuations on the top of this fluid come from some metric perturbation. Those were introduced during inflation. So the fluctuations are usually described by these data parameters, which if I can relate it by like simple I think it's related to the Newtonian potential, the gravitational potential. Something like phi, I think, plus phi dot divided by 1 plus w times h. So obviously the relate. So what we solve for usually in Einstein equation, the perturbatively, is that we use this parameter, the curvature perturbation, because it's easy to handle instead of doing that. Because I know simply the equation for zeta is something, the action for zeta in my gravitationally coupled to matter action, it turns out to be something like this. -squared -. This looks like almost a harmonic oscillator, and it's easy to and this eta, this prime is with respect to eta. Theta is dt over a. Now what you do is that you force, so you calculate, you say how zeta is behaving, and then from that you can deduce everything else, because now if I know what is the behavior of zeta, I know what is my gravitational potential doing, and if I know what my gravitational potential is doing, I can say, for example, if I am in matter domination era, how is matter, use the Poisson equation and say, okay, I have something like, what is the usual Poisson? It's like, if you have a gravitational potential, it's related to the matter over density. And then you can also relate it to temperature of the photons, because they are tightly coupled to matter. And everything this way becomes related. So what you do is I look at this. And I know what this CS is in different times. So I said, for example, if I'm looking around last scattering or during radiation era, it's given by this. The sound speed is given by that. And now I just need to know what is zeta is doing. And another maybe piece of information maybe you might be helpful to give your intuition is that now I wanna, when you are looking at something like CMB, for example, somewhere it's almost matter domination, but at, it's at the point that then all of a sudden this fluid becomes weakly coupled, that the matter has recombined and universe has expanded enough that photons become free all of a sudden. They cannot scatter efficiently enough from the matter anymore, and then they come towards us and we see them. And so we do see, for example, the temperature in homogeneity. Okay, so, but what I want to give you maybe very simple intuition is that this zeta is, if I'm during inflation, so let's write this in co-moving, maybe in Fourier space, the equation for this zeta is almost something like this. There is a damping term which I'm now ignoring. And if I'm talking from the modes that are very outside my horizon, this becomes actually the other damping term becomes important. Zeta is conserved. But when it comes back to the radiation era, it gives me some sort of oscillatory behavior. So zeta k is almost some, let's say, some cosine of k cs eta. Of course, there is a lot of approximation going into this, but you can see how if cs is not zero during radiation and it's given by this, let's say, and I take it, for example, let's say it's radiation era, so it's almost one third, one over square root of three, then almost CS is constant, and I get something like this, some oscillator behavior for zeta. There could be a phase here, of course. So now, then at some point before the last scattering, matter becomes dominant. CS goes to zero, and then again, zeta remains conserved. But at the point where it gets from the conserved part, where it was constant, to the end of radiation era, it gets imprinted, some behavior like this gets imprinted on it. And if I know what is eta, then from this point that it enters the horizon to this point, I can say what is zeta k, what is the oscillatory behavior of zeta in terms of k. And eta is like almost, let's say, for if these are all enter very early on, almost constant. Again, you can do it more precisely and see there is a correction because they don't exactly come out at the same time. But it's done. I can calculate it and say dt over a. Let's write it in terms of a. That becomes dA h a square. And during the radiation era, h square is the radiation is dominant, so it's a minus 4. So that's dA. I get a minus 2 where times a plus 2. It becomes dA, and it's from the moment that it enters to eta of recombination or equality, let's say. And that's almost dominated by the A at the end of it. equality, because A equality is much bigger. It would be delta A, but A equal, if A equality is much larger than A initial, it's almost A equality. And now let's say, what is the Hubble radius around this star? Hubble radius at that point is H E minus 1 is H not minus 1 times A minus 2 as equal at equality, right? And if I want to look at it in co-moving frame, I have to, I take plus 2, that's right. So in co-moving frame, I should divide it by A. So in co-moving, what I call the sound horizon, actually Hubble horizon, is H not minus 1 times A equality, which would be this, right? So we get this is equal to RH. So zeta of k is sort of proportional to k in co-moving sound speed times RH. Do you understand roughly get what I'm doing? And this I call the sound horizon. It basically, it's the same Hubble radius times the sound speed. RCH. Okay, so now if I was to look at zeta, so what we usually measure is not zeta k itself, right? It's some sort of two-point function. But if I'm measuring, let's say, CMB, which is some function of delta k squared, and it has the oscillatory part of it is as this behaving like zeta k squared. Then what I get is that. It's like two, you get another angle of that, but maybe we should do that, because that's what we really observe. Anyway, so what you're looking at now is, in terms of k, in Fourier space, you should expect some sort of oscillatory. Of course, I didn't calculate the constants, and that could also, the constants also should depend on k, and that there's lots of factors that goes into that, like the baryon density versus radiation, other stuff, and the inflationary spectra, what happened in inflation. But you can roughly see that at least in Fourier space, you have some oscillatory behavior, which might sound familiar to what you have seen in cosmology talk. They always, like for CMB, they plot something like this. But the nice thing about it is that now you know what is almost the distance between each two peak, because it's given by that wavelength, which is sound horizon radius. So you roughly expect that to be something like that. Of course, when you're looking at it, now I'm looking at it, looking at surface of lattice scattering from some co-moving distance, right? Then I have to also take something like what we did for luminosity distance. We should do some angular diameter distance calculation, which is that if the size of the object is something, then you look at it at some point and the universe is expanding, then the angle, for example, you look at, you might expect that to be the distance, but it has some relation between redshift and the distance. And basically, I don't know if I think I'm out of time. Yeah, I think you start to get diffusion being important. As K gets large, then of course there is also many other effects that goes into it. But if you didn't have that, just I think diffusion is what bounds it up. K becomes very large. There is other factors in that you have to take into account. Field stamping.
That's a very functions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I did here is that I used the
simplicity use the Fourier.
Mm-hmm. Because it carries an explanation of well, there are other factors that comes to that, but
that's
it's basically.
So, but okay. So, but the yes, what I want to say at this point is that if I have looking at some oscillation at some distance, I see it happen at k times x. It's almost as if it's theta, the angle I'm looking at it at the times l in the spherical. Harmonics, but I think maybe I shouldn't put that today. Let's see. So basically what you end up measuring is not this, but some. So you calculate, you predict this, what this has to be from theory, and then you what you measure is that some angular diameter of this, which would have been, it's something like RSH, divided by the co-moving distance of, let's call it theta. Co-moving distance of that surface. And then again, for this R, I know how the cosmology becomes important because I have to do this dz over x. However, I cannot use this simple expansion anymore because now I'm talking about very early on a higher redshift. So this becomes, it's not a simple, you have to really put in matter, curvature, another thing. And then you have a competition between the curvature and could change this. So if I measure this, then I go back and check with that and say, what would be the omega lambda or omega k and omega, and see if what would this fit in. And then again, you get out of this experiment also something like omega matter. Basically, what we get in the end, the first order effect, omega k is 0, and omega total is 1. And then you did use that. And if you have another measurement of omega n, you deduce that there must have been some omega lambda and do the fit. Now, the same game that you play with CMB, you can play with dark matter as well. And then dark matter drags with itself baryons. So if I look at the two-point function for a structure in the universe, that also has some imprint of this acoustic oscillation of zeta. And this is like the so-called baryonic acoustic oscillation. And basically what people do is they look at delta rho of baryons,
real space. Again, they see something at some scale which corresponds to this R of sun horizon at small peak, which shows that in Fourier there must have been some oscillation going on. And again, you have another measurement of this theta and sun horizon versus comoving distance, and go back, check with your integral, and see what omega contribution is. Okay. Questions? So hopefully next week we'll do more theoretical stuff and